The headlines, talks between Iran and the P4 Plus One on reviving the 2015 deal are paused at the request of the EU due to what has been described as external factors. Divisions emerge among EU leaders over Ukraine's appeal for quick accession to the bloc and the scope of sanctions against Russia. And Yemen's Ansar La movement says its drones have targeted Saudi Aramco oil facilities. Saudi Arabia's state news agency confirms that a refinery in Riyadh has been attacked. Hello and welcome, everybody. The Vienna talks between Iran and the P4 Plus One are paused at the request of the European Union foreign policy chief. Iran says the pause could provide a momentum for resolving the remaining issues. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has noted that a successful conclusion of the talks will be the main focus of all of the parties involved. Said Khatibzadeh stresses that no external factor can affect the parties' joint will to go forward for a collective agreement. Earlier, the EU foreign policy chief suggested a temporary halt to the talks due to what he called external factors. Josep Borrell tweeted that a final text is essentially ready and on the table. Borrell added that he and his team will be in contact with all the JCPOA parties and the U.S. to overcome the current situation. The EU's top negotiator, Enrique Mora, has expressed hope that the parties would be able to resume negotiations very soon. The Chinese envoy to the talks has expressed regret over the pause. Iran has time and again stressed that Washington needs to make a political decision to ensure Tehran's basic demands are met. Homa Lezgi is joining us now from the Austrian capital, Vienna. Homa, what can you tell us about this pause?
Fazia, yes, we just heard the news, of course, that the sides have finally decided to go for this break. And we also had a brief statement to the media by EU coordinator Enrique Mora just outside Palais Coburg behind me. He addressed the media saying, again, repeating the words of High Representative Josep Borrell, saying that because of, quote, external factors, they believe that this break is required. He also said that there is a spirit of a constructive and positive compromise by all the sides in these talks, including the most important ones or the ones most concerned with the process, the Americans and the Iranians, and that in order for this spirit to be, or this positive atmosphere to be preserved, it was decided for the sides to have this short pause or break to have further consultations and come back and hopefully bring these talks to a successful outcome. Now, how long is this pause going to be? The Chinese ambassador suggested in a few days, but the EU official, Mr. Mora, the coordinator, was not very clear about the timing. I think it's not clear yet, but the expectation is that it will and should not be very long. We also had remarks being made by the Russian ambassador, Mr. Mikhail Olyanov. He came out and he also addressed reporters when he was asked if there was this was a sign that there was an impasse in the talks. He rejected those claims, saying that there is no sign of an impasse and that things are moving ahead and that the Russians, in his words, do follow this position of expediting the process and they want a resolution of these talks as quickly as possible, with, of course, the essential need for them to preserve their national interests. As he said, Iranians also have to preserve theirs. We also had just earlier remarks by a senior EU official affiliated to these talks addressing the media as well. And that senior official telling us that, in fact, almost all of the text of a final agreement is ready, although we can't say that the text of an agreement is final until it is absolutely final. The maxim here would be nothing agreed upon until everything is agreed upon. But he did say that the text that they are working on now is almost more than 90% of what the sides have agreed on, that there are no disagreements, this senior EU official telling us, on the issue of sequencing or implementation, which is expected to take several months when we come to that stage of implementation. And then he also pointed out that the remaining issues, two three and not more do relate to the scope of sanctions that need to be lifted by the Americans, for instance, or the list of entities or people that are under sanctions. But this official telling us that the issues up for discussions are not political, they're just technical matters, and basically there's not much left to do when it comes to those issues. So we'll have to see where things will go from this stage on.
Thanks a lot, Homa Plesky, joining us from the Austrian capital, Vienna. Iran has a new eye in the sky. This week it put into orbit its second military satellite. As we'll see in this next report, the latest achievement comes despite stringent sanctions against the country.
The aerospace force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps successfully put a reconnaissance satellite into orbit this week. The Noor-2 was launched from Imam Khomeini Spaceport in Semnan province. The satellite reached a low orbit of 500 kilometers above the Earth on an Iranian three-stage Qassid carrier, which used a combination of liquid and solid fuels. The Noor-2 became Iran's second military satellite successfully placed in low Earth orbit. Commander of the Space Command of the IRGC's Aerospace Force said Iran's national space and defense organizations, knowledge-based companies, and universities cooperated in the Noor-2 project. Brigadier General Ali Jafarabadi explained that the domestically manufactured satellite incorporates the newest technology. It is the upgraded version of Noor-1, which was launched into orbit 21 months ago. Data obtained by Iran's second military satellite can have multiple general and defensive uses. The Noor-2 will orbit the Earth every 90 minutes and will pass over the Iranian sky 16 times every day. Its mission will last at least 3 years. The commander explained that the IRGC will launch a series of Noor satellites in the coming years to consolidate its position in low Earth orbit before aiming for the orbit 36,000 kilometers above land. The latest achievements of Iran's space program came a few days after the IRGC unveiled two underground bases housing state-of-the-art missiles and attack drones.
Iranian officials have congratulated the successful launch of Iran's second military satellite. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian praised the achievement, saying, "No sanction can block Iranian growth and progress." The IRGC says the latest success was another meaningful sign that Iran has defeated the enemy's sanctions.
Iran has been relentlessly developing new weapons and military equipment, arguing that it needs the means to defend itself in the world's most volatile region. Just weeks ago, the country unveiled a state-of-the-art ballistic missile with pinpoint precision. Khaybar Shekan boasts high maneuverability when it dives down, making it a nightmare for the world's most advanced missile shields. Iranians have stressed that their defense program grew out of the war initiated by Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s. Saddam's forces showered Iranian cities with missiles and bombs provided by the East and the West, while Iranians say no one sold them any proper means of defense. Iranians argue that they have no choice but to build their own defense industry. The latest achievement strongly suggests that Iran's pursuit of robust defense capabilities is in full swing despite stringent American sanctions.
I think that these developments send several interrelated messages, the first and foremost being that Iran's technological development will not be held back by the obviously failed efforts of the United States and its allies to curtail Iranian technological development. It sends another similar message regarding sanctions, that sanctions are going to be completely ineffectual in terms of holding back Iran's scientific as well as industrial development.
Iran is still engaged in the negotiations in the Austrian capital aimed at removing the sanctions, but its defense industries are not waiting for the talks to end in an agreement. Observers believe Iran's launch of a military satellite into orbit as talks in Vienna are still underway is sending a clear message. that it will never negotiate over its defense capabilities, and that no agreement can ever restrict its defense, missile, and space programs. The Islamic Republic has made it clear that it will never ask for permission from anyone to manufacture its own means of defense.
Key battleground developments on day 16 of the Russian offensive in Ukraine. Russia says it has launched a high-precision, long-range attack on two military airfields in the cities of Lutsk and Ivano-Frankivsk. Moscow says the airfields are now out of action. It says Russian forces have destroyed over 3,200 Ukrainian military installations since the beginning of the offensive. Russian troops are now edging closer to the capital, Kiev. The city's mayor says half of the population has fled, with Kiev being transformed into, quote, a fortress. Civilians continue to flee other cities, too. The Ukrainian government has accused Russia of bombing corridors meant to evacuate the civilians. At least four major Ukrainian cities are now encircled by Russian forces. They include Kharkiv in the east and Sumy in the northeast. Meanwhile, pro-Russian forces fighting for independence for years say they've captured Volnovakha. It's located north of the besieged city of Mariupol. Russian President Vladimir Putin says he allows foreign volunteers to fight alongside pro-Russian forces in the breakaway Donbas region in eastern Ukraine.
If you see that there are people who want, on a voluntary basis, especially those not in it for money, to come and help people living in Donbas, you need to meet them halfway and help them move to the combat zones.
Putin was speaking at a Security Council meeting with his ministers. Also, there was Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu. He said around 16,000 volunteers from West Asia are ready to assist Russian troops fighting in Ukraine. He said Western countries have been sending arms to Ukraine in, quote, an absolutely uncontrolled way. The Russian defense minister proposed that captured Western missile systems, including American anti-tank equipment, are handed over to pro-Russian forces in Donetsk and Luhansk cities. European Union leaders meet for the second day in France for talks over the Russian offensive in Ukraine. They've dismissed Kiev's appeal for rapid accession to the bloc following divisions among the leaders over the demand.
There is a request for a candidate membership from Ukraine, and that is now in process, and we have fast-tracked the sending it on to the Commission earlier this week by the Council. That's one, but that will take time, months, maybe years before you get to anything.
Yeah. Except Eastern Germany in times of Helmut Kohl, nobody entered the European Union overnight.
France is also opposed to Ukraine's fast EU membership. French President Emmanuel Macron argues that the bloc cannot open a membership procedure with a country at war. He says caution is needed. That's why Ukraine's neighbors on the EU's eastern flank support the country's rapid accession. The EU has also remained divided on the scope of further sanctions against Ukraine, against Russia, that is, over Ukraine. Some leaders are pushing for tougher measures that would hit Russia's oil and gas industries, despite repercussions for the EU itself. Others, including Germany, have ruled out the ban. Yemen's armed forces say they've carried out a large-scale drone operation targeting Saudi Arabia's oil facilities. The spokesman for the Yemeni army says they have targeted a Saudi Aramco refinery in Riyadh using three Samad 3 drones. Yahya Sarei says six Samad 1 drones also attacked Aramco facilities in Jizan, Abha, and other regions. He says the operation, codenamed Breaking the Siege 1, was a response to Riyadh's fuel embargo on Yemen. Sarei says his country is ready to carry out more operations in retaliation to Saudi Arabia's aggression and its blockade. Meanwhile, the Saudi state news agency has cited a government official as confirming that a refinery in Riyadh was attacked on Thursday. The news agency, however, said the attack caused a small fire that was contained and the refinery's operations and supplies were not affected. Yemen's government has shed further light on the fuel shortage in the country caused by illegal seizure of the country's fuel ships by Saudi-led coalition. According to Yemeni officials, the shortage has impressed all aspects of civilian life in the war-torn country. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
As Yemenis experienced the worst fuel shortage since the beginning of the Saudi-led war in 2015, Yemen's petroleum company held a press conference to highlight the impact of the Saudi piracy acts in the Red Sea.
In 2021, the Saudi-led coalition prevented entry of fuel needed to meet 95% of the general need for fuel. This shows that the Saudi-led coalition uses fuel as a pressure card amid the ongoing war. This is a clear violation of the international humanitarian law. The situation is dangerous, especially with the rise of oil prices internationally due to the Russian-Ukrainian conflict.
Officials say the purpose of the Saudi-led coalition seizure of fuel ships is to raise the price of fuel and spread chaos in the country.
The Saudi-led coalition is continuing its siege, intending to raise fuel prices. They believe the rise in fuel prices will force people to go out to the streets and protest. But the Yemenis have proven to the Saudi-led coalition that they know who causes the fuel crisis, and they hold the United Nations responsible for its continued silence.
Besides the war, Saudi Arabia and its allies have imposed an all-out blockade on Yemen since March 2015. The United Nations describes Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian crisis, but it has not taken any action to end the suffering of millions of Yemenis.
Experts believe Saudi Arabia's recent measures to block Yemen's fuel imports are yet another proof that the Saudi military operation against Yemen is a failure. And they also say the Russia-Ukraine conflict has exposed the international community's double standard on humanitarian crisis. Abdulatif Roshali, Sana.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, last week we completed the explanation of Surah Najm, and from this Friday onwards, we embark on explanation of the next surah, that is Surah Qamar, which is number 54 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It was revealed in Mecca and has 55 ayahs. It opens with cataclysmic sign of the end of the world coming and the moon having a split apart. It takes its name from the opening ayah, which mentions the moon or Qamar, that here serves as a reference to the day of resurrection. The surah deals mainly with the punishment dealt out to the previous generations of disbelievers. These were presented as a warning to the pagans of Mecca, and are also relevant to the disbelievers of all times. With the refrain, is there anyone who will be admonished? Running throughout the surah. Finally, the treatment of the disbelievers on the Day of Judgment is contrasted to the everlasting bliss the believers will enjoy in paradise. An interesting feature of this surah is that all 55 of its ayahs end with the letter R. A narration from the Prophet of Islam says, whoever recites Surah Qamar and perseveres will enter the plane of judgment in a splendor on the day of resurrection, on condition of having acted upon Quranic injunctions. Let us start with ayah 1, 2, and 3 of Surah Qamar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. اقتربت الساعة وانشق القمر وإن يروا آية يعرضوا ويقولوا سحر مستمر وكذبوا واتبعوا أهواءهم وكل أمر مستقر.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. The hour has drawn near and the moon is split. If they see a sign, they turn away and say, an incessant magic. They denied and followed their own desires, and every matter has a setting appropriate to it. The opening ayah, which mentions the drawing near of the hour, is a reference to the inevitability of the Day of Resurrection as the most significant alteration in the world of creation that after death and revival opens a new life in the hereafter. It is a realm whose greatness and extent are indescribable and unintelligible to us because of attachment to the materialistic world. In other words, resurrection is close to us. It is a constant reminder that life of the mortal world is transient, which means we ought to be attentive and prepare for the provision of the hereafter. The opening ayah ends with the Arabic words shaqul qamar, or splitting of the moon, which is a reference to a famous miracle of the Prophet of Islam recorded in several eyewitness accounts, and is an undeniable proof of divine omnipotence over all things. It was performed at the insistent demand of the Arab pagans and the Jews. At night, the Prophet performed prayer and prostration to God and supplicated, at which, to the amazement of the onlookers, the full moon was cleft asunder. The Jews who had read in the Torah how God made the sun and the moon stand still for Prophet Joshua, the successor of Prophet Moses, peace upon them, accepted the truth of Islam on seeing this miracle, but Abu Jahl, the leader of the pagan Arabs of Mecca, refused to believe and called it magic, as Ayah 2 says, "If they see a sign, they turn away and say, an incessant magic." The splitting of the moon was not any deception of the eyesight of the onlookers in Mecca, since this phenomenon was witnessed by travelers to Syria and was also visible in far-off India, as testified by inscriptions on monuments in Kerala, where King Chakravarti Perumal of the Malabar region, seeing this strange sight, and later on learning that the last prophet had appeared in the Arabian Peninsula, made a journey to Mecca and became a Muslim. A scientific proof of this miracle is the deep scar or rift discovered on the moon and photographed by NASA astronomers in the US, which is further proof of such a phenomenon occurring in the past. According to exegetes, when resurrection draws near, the moon will also cleft asunder. As is clear by Ayah 3, it is the habit of obdurate disbelievers to belie the truth of the prophetic call, of miracles, and of the inevitability of resurrection, because they follow their concupiscent desires without realizing that everyone receives the reward and recompense of their own deeds, since nothing shall be effaced in this world. These ayahs teach us that, number one, the day of resurrection will certainly occur no matter the disbelievers deny the truth, including the universal mission of the seal of messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Number two, the miracles are not a matter of surprise, since everything, including the wonders of nature, is in the power of the Almighty Creator, who granted the Prophet of Islam several miracles, of which the greatest and the eternal is the Noble Quran, whose flawless eloquence and timeless wisdom no one has been able to match. And number three, obstinate persons call miracles a magic and deny the manifest truth because of their immersion in carnal desires. Now let us listen to ayahs 4 and 5 of the same surah.
وَلَقَدْ جَاءَهُمْ مِنَ الْأَنْبَاءِ مَا فِيهِ مُزْدَجَرٌ حِكْمَةٌ بَالِغَةٌ فَمَا تُغْنِي النُّذُرُ.
There have already come to them, the disbelievers, reports containing admonishment and representing far-reaching wisdom, but warnings are of no avail. The account of the ancients and the divine wrath that struck them for their abominable sins and unpardonable crimes against humanity are mentioned in the Noble Quran as admonishment for all in order to desist from the falsehood. But the intransigent disbelievers never heed these far-reaching or profound words of wisdom. In other words, the fate that befell the past nations ought to open our eyes, since the apparent triumph of tyranny and evil is short-lived, and it is truth that eventually triumphs. There is inevitable reckoning on the Day of Judgment. Ayah 5 points out that the Noble Quran is wisdom par excellence. The opponents of truth are aware of the fate of the misled nations of the past. Yet they continue their evil deeds and denial of facts and realities, thereby bringing destruction upon themselves, despite the long respite the All-Merciful God has given for repentance and reform. The ayahs of the Noble Quran, which are for all time and all places, thus seal the argumentation so that people hear the truth, ponder upon it, and decide to take the course of action. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, reflection on the history and fate of the nations of the past help us discover the truth and the causes of destruction of the ancient civilizations. Number two, the message of the Noble Quran is based on wisdom and logic. And number three, prophets proclaim the truth in order to seal the argumentation for mankind, since facts cannot be forced upon anyone and there is no compulsion in their acceptance, as the Almighty has given us the intellect to discern between good and evil, which eventually determines reward or punishment. In conclusion of this week's episode, let us listen to ayahs 6, 7, and 8 of Surah Qamar.
فَتَوَلَّ عَنْهُمْ يَوْمَ يَدْعُو الدَّاعِ إِلَى شَيْءٍ نُكُرٍ خُشَّ عَنْ أَبْصَارُهُمْ يَخْرُجُونَ مِنَ الْأَجْدَاثِ كَأَنَّهُمْ جَرَادٌ مُنْتَشِرٌ مهطعين إلى الداعي يقول الكافرون هذا يوم عسير.
So turn away from them, the day when the caller calls for a dire thing. With a humbled look in their eyes, they will emerge from their graves as if they were a scattered locust, scrambling toward the summoner. The faithless will say, "This is a hard day." Ayah 6 addresses the Prophet of Islam and means to say that when disbelievers refuse to believe even after witnessing such great miracles, you leave them to their fate without taking more trouble in the hope of removing their ignorance, but convey the message that when the day the divine caller calls people towards a horrible thing, that is the resurrection for the final judgment on the basis of the record of everyone's deeds, they will have no clue to what awaits them. As the next ayah means to say, The humbling eyes is a token of intensity of fear or shamefulness of the disbelievers and sinners. The similitude of disbelievers and sinners on the day of resurrection to scattered locusts reflects their perplexity and astonishment upon coming out of graves and hastening hither and hither and witnessing the torment on that day. In other words, when they leave their graves upon the call, they protrude their necks toward the calling angels out of the intensity of fear. It is but natural that when a horrible sound is heard, people immediately protrude their neck and then turn toward its source, hasten toward it, and have no other choice but to make their presence at the divine tribunal. As Ayah 8 means to say, the horror of the hard incidents of that day encompasses them all, since all the things cause fear in sinners. May God Almighty bestow His mercy upon His servants. On that day, there shall be neither fear nor grief for the believers. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, unsealing the argumentation, the faithless should be left to their own fate, to accept the truth or to deny it, since God has given the freedom to choose reward or punishment. Number two, the sins of the day of resurrection are extremely horrible for the faithless and the sinners. Unimaginable consequences indeed. And number three, resurrection is physical and all mankind will be brought to life in their original shape for the final judgment.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of RIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
The wilaya of the Ahlul Bayt that each of the Imams led the Ummah towards was to establish the government of the Ahlul Bayt by getting rid of the authorities that were not implementing God's law and were not representing God's law and God's message and God's authority. That's what walaya means. That's what Imam Zain al-Abidin did. Imam Zain al-Abidin, salamullah alayhi, was in battle as Imam al-Husayn was. And Imam al-Husayn was in battle before Muawiyah died. He didn't engage in rebellion. No, there was armed rebellion after Muawiyah died. Before that, it wasn't armed. It was through training, through teaching. There came a time where it was necessary to go through that. Why the conditions make a difference? The important thing is, when you want to establish the authority of God on earth, the governments, the authorities, the elite, the rulers, people who have wealth, people who run society, people who are in control, who are not divine, they are the obstacles. The jahl of the people is an obstacle. The ignorance of the people that the best government for them, the best rule for them, the best law for them is the law and authority of God. That's what will protect and safeguard their prosperity in this world, and it will transcend into the next world as well. The ignorance of the people in this regard is an obstacle in establishing that. There's a battle, there's a struggle, there's a jihad. Why is it that we go to each of the imams and we're supposed to say to each of them in the ziyarah of each of them, it says this, the Ahlul Bayt have taught us, and then in ziyarah jama'ah, the various forms of the ziyarat that we are to recite with every one of the Ahlul Bayt, or referring to all of them, or when we visit each of them, we say, أَشْهَدُ أَنَّكَ جَاهَدْتَ فِي اللَّهِ حَقَّ جِهَادِهِ or أَشْهَدُ أَنَّكُمْ جَاهَدْتُمْ فِي اللَّهِ حَقَّ جِهَادِهِ. There's jihad they're involved with. Jihad for what? The greatest part of their jihad and the direction they're working towards, that practical, that element that is visible, that can be seen, that can be constantly checked to see if we're moving in the direction of the Ahlul Bayt, is walaya, government. The Ahlul Bayt, we're moving towards that government and battling all the obstacles that were there. The main obstacle that everything else is related to is the authority of kufr and taghut. When kufr and taghut have power, when kufr and taghut have control, when kufr and taghut have authority, they will control the minds of the people, the decisions of the people, and they will force them in the wrong direction. And as much as you want to give knowledge to the people, give them the direction that they need to and learn what's right and what's wrong, because they control the laws of the land. They control what forms opinion amongst people. They have a position that people look up to. It will not be effective. And this is why the importance of wilaya is that. The importance of authority belonging to God and belonging to the Prophet and belonging to his household after him, to the Imams, to Ali ibn Abi Talib specifically, and then after him, the rest of the Imams. The importance of it is that, to be able to use that authority, that position, to guide people in the direction that they need to be guided to. And as soon as the Prophet was able to establish that government, he did. And as soon as he established that government, the speed at which people were coming to Islam increased. And while he was the ruler in Medina, because there was the rule of Taghut in most of Arabia, with the capital being Mecca, again, outside of the area that the Prophet is ruling, it's very difficult to get the message across. People are being pulled by leaders, rulers that are not just. When do people flock towards Islam? When the authority of Taghut falls in the capital. The government of Mushrikeen falls in Mecca. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Idha ja'a Nasrullahi wal-Fath. This is the conquest of Mecca. Wa ra'ayta an-nasa yadkhuluna fi dinillahi afwaja. At this point, when the conquest occurs, then you'll have people flocking towards Islam. You see the numbers of Muslimin mu'mineen increasing rapidly. As long as Taghut has authority, they will manipulate minds, they will pull people in the wrong direction. The Holy Prophet guided people, and he saw correctly that the government of Kufr and Taghut is what needs to be removed. And so he planned for it, and he worked against that government and took it down. The Imams, Imam al-Hussein's call against Yazid is for what reason? What is he saying? He's saying this is the rule of Taghut. If Yazid is accepted as the so-called Khalifa of Rasulullah, and he is not, what direction is he going to pull people towards? The direction opposite that of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. If Imam al-Hussein wants to guide people while Yazid is in power, while Yazid is ruling, what's going to happen? People are not going to come. And if he fears that people will come, he will get rid of the Imam, as he tried, and physically he did, but the message of the Imam, because he was more clever and more mindful, and more mindful and clever than Muawiyah and all these rulers from the beginning of time to the end, Imam al-Hussein, with his martyrdom, saved Islam and moved this agenda forward by empowering people mentally and spiritually that you should fight even if your numbers are small. Even if they slaughter you, you will win. That message is the message of Imam al-Hussein. Salamullah alayhi. Governance. The direction they were leading the ummah towards, every single one of the Imams, is to establish the authority, the government of Allah on earth.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود
صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on February 17, 2022 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with the participation of people from Tabriz and East Azerbaijan, commemorating the anniversary of the Tabriz uprising of February 18, 1978.
The urgent needs of the present time are usually quickly recognized by the masses of the people. And with a quick mention, they recognize them and enter the field. This was the case in the sacred defense era. Whenever Imam made the slightest mention of something, a deluge of people would take to the fields of battle. The same was true of recent events, such as defending the holy shrines. Of course, the vigilance of the Iranian nation in this regard is truly astonishing. They really enter the field vigilantly, when necessary, a clear example of which in the past decades, as I said, was their presence in the front lines and presence in the confrontation with anti-revolutionary forces. The case of Tabriz in 1359 is an example in this regard, and there are other cases in other parts of the country as well. The people have done other activities as well. Thank you.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The ninth of day was one of these activities. The people entered the arena voluntarily because they felt a need and they satisfied it. The same is true of scientific activities needed by country during the outbreak of the coronavirus. The young scientists of the country immediately began to work. We were witness up close to the activities. As soon as the issue was raised that a vaccine should be produced for this, scientists in different places and organizations began to work. And the result of their work is a variety of vaccines in the country that people used, as a result of which the country became needless of begging others. And it was not clear how many vaccines they would have given to us if they would have given any. If we had not produced it in our own, they would not have given us any. Such is the people's feeling about the urgent needs of the country and their fulfillment of those needs. The most recent example of the fulfillment of these needs is the people's presence in the 22nd of Bahman rally a few days ago. Today's 22nd of Bahman was astonishing.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.